Hey, what's up, dude?
What up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. Hang on 1 second. Let me close this.
Sure.
I'm good, bro. I'm at my son's football practice.
Right on.
Just got here. Yeah,
okay.
Dude.
Let me know when you're ready to get started, and we'll do this.
No, I'm ready. I'm ready right now. Yeah, I'm just, yeah.
Awesome. All right. Welcome to another episode of The King's Couch. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing a BMX legend and fellow musician, Rick Thorne. Rick, what's going on, man?
What up, dude? What are you doing?
I'm actually just sitting in my car, if you really want to know.
Hey, it's all good.
Yeah, man.
Are you in your car? Are you recording this from your car? Sick.
I'm actually recording this from my phone.
No, but your actual cell phone, you can record it?
Yeah, so I can record all these interviews strictly off my phone when I have to do phone interviews.
Tell me how to do this, bro.
I do
my podcast over the phone.
Sure, yeah. I'll send you a link for the app. Definitely.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we tried to do this interview last Friday night up in Big Bear. For our listeners out there, Rick Thorne has an amazing band they're called Good Guys in Black. And how long have you been doing your band for, Rick?
Man, I've been playing for a while. I started the band in Christmas Eve, 2007, dude.
Oh.
And I'll tell you briefly how what happened is when I came out, like, people were like, oh, pro BMX, you know, not a lot of BMXers start bands. There are BMXers in bands. I take that back. But I'm just saying, like, you know, like top X Games guys, there's not many, you know, dudes like that that are starting bands, you know, and I think a lot of people felt like, oh, your career's slipping, you start this band and shit. But I was like, no, I just always wanted to start a band. And I had such a good run in the beginning. And what happened is that I got kind of like bitter about understanding musicians and people that were just belling on me left and right when we had opportunity. And I just scratched my head, like frustrated, you know,
right.
Going through different band members and all along trying to find my own sound and understanding music and learning the music and stuff. And it took a while. And so what I did, it's just long version and then I'll shut up. But what I did is I changed the band to Rick Thorne for like 3 or 4 years, toured the UK, but it was all Good Guys in Black music, but it still wasn't the sound I wanted. You know what I mean? And then I was like, once I calmed down, cooled myself, understood how this business works, I was like, you know what? It's all good. And then now I'm having the most success that I've ever had with not only the sound, but like the shows we're playing, the gigs we're booking and stuff. So it's kind of back, you know? So it's kind of like a learning curve for me, not being born into music or anyone in my family doing music, you know? So that long version of how I started it, that's the year. And it's been a rad ride, but lately it's been freaking awesome, you know?
That's rad. Now, was this first show that we did together on Friday, our last Friday, was that your first show back?
No, I played a couple shows up until then, and I did some with Punk Rock Karaoke. I played, but that was just a couple months ago, but that was the first, like, I can't say, like, you know, we played the Skate Shop, and then we played this bar out in Hemet, which was cool. But that Ghetto Fest was rad because, you know, the lineup was sick. You know what I mean?
Oh, big time.
Best lineup. Yeah, it was a good lineup.
So for our listeners, Gutter Fest was a 2-day festival at a venue up in Big Bear Mountain called The Cave, and it featured the band Guttermouth, who headlined each night. And Rick's band and my band, Authentic Sellout, got to play. Rick played right after us, and we got to, you know, kick things off for the first night of it. It was epic. We tried doing the podcast interview there, but it was way too loud, and there wasn't a quiet space for us to really do it. You know, now we have the technology where we can do it over the phone using an app. How rad is that?
There we go.
Yeah. Let's go back to the beginning. Let's talk a bit about how you got into BMXing and what influenced you to want to go pro.
Dude, I started riding bikes, well, my whole life, really. I started hitting quarter pipes around 1981. They were new. We didn't know what they were. We saw some shit in the magazines, and we got some ramp plans. And then I built my own quarter pipe in 83 in my backyard and was just riding by myself. And, you know, you got to put yourself in the mind space back then. There wasn't anybody in BMX sponsored outside of California,
right.
Period. California was where it was at. Skate parks were still there before they tore them down. the lifestyle never snowed. The weather was always good. I mean, California is just, in my opinion, the best state for me, for what I need to do in my life. I love it. And, you know, dude, like back then there was no future, you know, like I graduated high school. I started doing shows in 85 and competing in 85, but shows were like at the state fair, at a county fair, at a boat show, at a, you know, petting zoo, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like we'd be next to the pig races and shit. And this is before like it really had craze on TV and, you know, ESPN had got a hold of it. And, you know, back then it was like the vision to being pro was just like, it wasn't really so much like I'm dreaming of being pro. Maybe kids nowadays might do because they have opportunity. For me, it was just like, I wanted to run out of spots and man, I'd love to just get a free bike, you know?
Right.
And that was unheard of. And, you know, dude, back then, like, it was just like I graduated and my mom said, I'm going to buy you a car for graduation. I said, I don't want a car. I want a new bike. So she bought me a complete Haro Master. It's badass. And I just rode it. And I, you know, I worked at Olive Garden for success, chasing my dream, paying my bills, the way to contest. Didn't have a car, rode around everywhere. And you know what? It just worked out, you know? And then I rode 14 years before I actually turned pro. Because, you know, for a long time, for a long while, of all those years of getting better, there was no sponsors. And, you know, I was lucky because I grew up in Kansas City around a good friend of my best friend, Dennis McCoy. He became the number one pro in the world, and he happened to be the first sponsored rider outside of California in 1985. And that just, everything that happened for him inspired me, and I just had this, like, I guess you could say role model in a sense. Like all these things are happening to your best friend and you wanted it, you know?
Right.
So, but as hard as you chased it, even for him at the time, you know, there might've been two or three pros in the whole sport that were making money and it wasn't that much. It wasn't until TV. So like kids nowadays, they'll see like, oh, I'm going to be pro and I'm going to have a sponsor and I'm going to do this. And that their visions are, they grow up into it differently than we did. We grew up to it where it was like, I started riding because I wanted to get out of the house. Single parent, a lot of issues going on, a lot of anger, a lot of ways I wanted to vent, you know, it was a way for me to be positive, even though I didn't know I was being positive, you know?
Yeah.
And that was the only reason I rode. The pro, to answer this in a way, it's really like, the pro thing was like secondary to all that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It was almost like just so I could ride and learn tricks and feel good about myself was it, bro.
Right.
And so, and then turning pro just, you know, and then ESPN came along and then the X Games and then, you know, the rest of history is what it is today. And now the Olympics, you know? So, yeah, man, I never growing up in Kansas City, bro. And like no sponsors, nothing that and industry shit. I just kept riding cause I loved it. It made me feel good. And that was the only reason. I just got back from the skate park today. A little edit for my Instagram. I ride every day, bro. I try to.
That's right.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. I did a little edit. I learned a new trick today, too. I have never done the one-handed disaster, and then I did a one-handed tabletop disaster. I had never done those.
Oh, really?
So you can always keep learning. Yeah, you can always keep learning. Like, you just keep your psyche, you know, and keep setting goals.
Right.
So.
Maybe we can learn something new every day, man.
You do. But back then, I mean, you know, like kids today, I'm glad that kids today have a future in it.
Mm.
Just, and you can always tell who's in it for the right reasons because they're in it longer.
Right.
Just, I think, from my generation, we're cut from a different cloth. When we got something, we worked really hard for it. Now imagine this. You want to get sponsored. You're busting tables. You're riding your bike to work. You pay all your way to a contest, and you land your first photo in a magazine. You think back. What did I learn in high school? Oh, yeah. Mass media. How to put together a resume. Let me Xerox this. Call a team manager over the phone. Send it in. Cross my fingers and hope they reply. That's what it was like just to get free product. There was no, like, check out my Instagram, here's my YouTube video, all that. Way easier now, but it's also way more competitive.
Oh, dude, I totally know the feeling. When I started off in the music industry, my background is I've been in it for over 21 years. I started taking over a nightclub in 2002. So that was, like,
cool.
Right at the tail end of receiving a Manila press kit in the mail. And I was still even getting cassette tapes at that point. And then, you know, I started finding bands on mp3.com and on the internet. And the whole digital age started revolutionizing everything. And then MySpace came out. And then, you know, Facebook. And then Instagram. And all the different social media platforms we have today. So I agree 100% with what you're saying. Kids have it,
yeah, you get it
so made, you know, with the way technology has made things so much more accessible and easier for you to promote your product. But the problem that we're running into is the oversaturation, because now everybody's trying to go out there and do it, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what? Those that really are into it, they'll make it. If you really want it, you figure out a way to make it. I mean, you know, you just can't let up. And like nowadays, it's like everything's very image-based, very brand-based, very like, you know, people complain a lot about Instagram because like Instagram ain't really what life's about. But at the same time, do you want to hear everybody's fucking problems on Instagram?
No.
No, you don't. I don't. I mean, you want to show your best stuff, your most motivating stuff you can, even if you're going through something. I used to use Instagram. Check it out. I used to use Instagram as a way to remind myself. Like people would say, I preach a lot, and I wasn't meaning it to be that way, but I was going through a lot in my life. And I was using it actually as therapy for myself to get through what I was going through. Mm. And by laying it down on Instagram and posts that were positive and things, I was really just preaching to myself. And I had to remind people, like, dude, I ain't trying to preach to you. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to tell you what to do with your life. You know what I mean? I'm only reminding myself what to do with my life. And so, you know, Instagram, I tell my kids that all the time. Like, dude, half the stuff you're watching is, you know, a waste of time. But guess what? So was Gilligan's Island when I was a kid growing up.
Yeah, they called it the boob tube back in our generation.
Yeah. Three's Company, what did that serve? Didn't serve no purpose, you know? It's cool. Jefferson's and all this shit.
It's just another
waste of time too.
Source of entertainment, just like, you know, social media. And now we have these smartphones, so we can literally watch videos and TV shows and movies whenever we want on the go. A few years ago, our band Authentic Sellout wrote a song called Technology, and I even brought in my friend Marcos, a guitar player from POD, to come in and produce it, because I was inspired by a kid glued to his cell phone, and I'm singing right in his face, and he didn't know I was there for at least 30 seconds, and it just got to me, and I started noticing. It became like almost like an obsession. Like everyone's just glued to their phones, and all these bands are up there busting their ass, and like half the crowd is like, you know, just totally distracted. So the whole message, you know, especially what you're saying, it's not about like preaching. It was like a very therapeutic thing for me, but also getting the message out there that, you know, we can't let technology control our lives. Like that documentary that came out called The Social Dilemma on Netflix. You know, even creators of all these features and platforms are talking about like how they got hooked on their own creations, and they had to start disciplining themselves to be able to put their smartphones down and not just stay connected the whole time. You know, because it becomes like a habit and an addiction if you really think about it. You know, so what you're saying, you know, like our generation, like we didn't have all these accessible devices. We were able to go out and skate and ride. And that was like our feeling of freedom. A lot of kids these days don't really understand that, you know,
sorry to interrupt you, but that goes to parenting. Mm-hmm. Cause I mean, I'm a single parent. I've been single now for 9 years and you know, I like that. I want to give my kids all of my attention raising them, but sometimes it was easy because I got shit to do, you know. It ain't easy cooking and cleaning and doing everything and laundry and homework and shit. And then you need a break. I don't mind sitting on their phones. But the difference with my kids are my son does football 3 times a week and speed training once a week. My daughter surfs. She's out with her friends skating. They still have their phone, but the lifestyle that I am, that they've seen me be and that I rubbed off on them, they've been in team sports since they're 2 years old, soccer, baseball, basketball, on the line, jiu-jitsu, everything.
That's like, amazing.
So, it's parenting. It's up to the parents to say, hey, you know, push your kids sports at a young age and don't wait till they're like 15 and go, do you want to do sports? Because their minds, they're not even in the shape to do sports. You know, your body has to, you know what I mean? You have to get in shape. You have to start young, you know? And so I hear some parents say all that stuff and I was like, well, it's kind of up to you. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, if you give a kid a phone and say, sit here and eat, they'll do that.
Yeah, right.
You got to be like, get off your phone, we're going on a bike ride. You know, that's kind of been my way of life. And that's why my kids are athletic. But, you know, everybody's different. You know?
Right.
But you're right. Some people, and the video games too, but whatever.
Yeah, and that, you know, that was like something I was going to get to. You know, I was actually just going to say, I'm not a parent, so I don't know what it's like to be a parent. I mean, I've played the Funkle to like pretty much all of my bandmates' kids, especially our rhythm guitar player, Andy. Like, he's the closest link I have to a son or a kid. And I've known him since he was only a few weeks old when I first met his dad, you know, but he's just like you. He's totally into action sports, but he, you know, has the same sentiment. You know, he makes his kid go charge and unglues him from playing Minecraft, for example, because he'll sit there for hours and do it, you know, but
no, don't get me wrong. My kid played video games like crazy, but I tell my son, look, dude, if I could be a pro BMX, you can be a pro football player.
Right. Mind over matter.
Straight up. Here's three simple words you need. Don't give up. Cheesy as it sounds, it's the truth. You're grinding. You're not getting anything. You get a little shine, then it goes away, and then you come back, you're still grinding. Just don't give up. Keep your mind on where you want to go. If that dude can do it, you can do it.
Right.
That's kind of how I model myself, and that's what I tell my kids. Like, if you want something, get out there and do it.
Yeah.
You know?
So anyways. Wise words. So if you had to, like, give, you know, our young listeners, especially out there, some mindful advice for going pro or, you know, wanting to, you know, just learn how to BMX and do all the different tricks and whatnot, like, what kind of advice would you give them?
I think anybody that wants to ride, like, you know, or paid or moto or surf or whatever, do it because the way it makes you feel, you know? The goals that it sets, the feeling that you get when you accomplish, when you pull something. You know, I've had this talk with my son. I'm like, why do you want to play football? Is it the stadium? Is it catching the ball? Is it the crowd? Is it the attention? He's like, no, I just like the game. And that was the best answer. And, you know, you have to, for kids getting involved, you know, obviously, like, I'll say it, like, stay off drugs, don't drink. You know what I mean? Keep your mind on the feeling of what riding is. And, you know, take your time, you know, at the same time, you know, wear your pads and all that stuff. But like, I think ultimately, if, you know, if you want to do, you know, be a pro bike rider and that's something that you want to go after, do it, you know, do it, make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons because, you know, you don't want to let yourself down or waste your own time, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well put, my friend.
I had to question myself that back in the day, you know?
Yeah. I think
yeah, man.
At some point everybody has to kind of question themselves, you know.
It's like playing music. Yeah. It's like people ask me, why do you want to play music? It's like, well, because actually it's another form of expression and it's creative and I love performing. And so for me, it's like that feeling of like making someone rock out, getting involved, sending your message, just being positive influence. Mm. To me, that's what it is. You know, it's like, because writing, I was always expressing myself, but it was through an instrument in a sense. Like, and you have your helmet on, you're on your bike, you're on the ramp. Singing is just like, you're just there. Like, let's go. It's me and a mic, right? So verbally, that's the way I get to express myself. BMX, it's almost like I get to express myself physically, like through the tricks and stuff.
Right.
So it's kind of a good combination of both. You know, it's healthy.
Yeah, I agree. My father raised me on surfing. You know, I started surfing when I was about 8 years old, fell in love with that. He showed me all his records and his vinyl collection, peeled me away from the radio. And, you know, it goes back to what you were saying about parenting. And I'm lucky I had that, you know,
right.
And he's always been a huge supporter of every endeavor I've always done. I mean, shit, we almost went in together and bought a portion of this club Brick by Brick I used to work at when they were looking for a partner at that time. But that is something that I'm fortunate to have. And, you know, not everyone is fortunate to have a supportive parent like that. I've met people across the way and, you know, like one of my friends told me he was an orphan And he's just like, I just had to, you know, figure out my way and navigate through life, but I can't let my haunt pass me. And, you know, I went from foster home to foster home. And, you know, by the time I was like 18, 19, I was on my own completely, you know. But you just got to keep your mind focused on the bigger picture of what you want, you know. And
well, yeah, dude. And you know what, parenting, I'll say, you know, it's not like a pet. You got a dog, it's like different. You can leave a dog alone for 8 hours
right.
and come back and he's psyched to see you and pet him, play with you and shit. Like, kids take work. You know what? Like, I sacrificed touring and for the last, you know, so many years. I've seen all my friends, you know, tour and do other stuff. And I was talking to my friend the other day and I was like, you know what, dude? I'm kind of glad that my band's now starting to take off. He's like, really? I go, yeah, because my kids are raised.
Right.
And I miss it. You know what I mean? I'm still not missing any of it, but it's like, you know, anyone out there listening, they're like, yeah, whatever, it's easier said than done. I'll tell you right now, I'll be the first to tell you, parenting's not easy. It's challenging and it's rewarding, but, you know, making the time for your kid after working all day, I get it why a lot of people, you know, might not be cheery to take your kid to football practice or get him involved with sports and just sit at the phone. I understand. It just takes a lot of work, man. It does. Raising kids is not a fucking walk in the park. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not financially, everything all the way around. It's just not. But I'm hyper, so let's go. You know what? But that's why I stayed single, dude. Because I didn't want the responsibility of a relationship. You know, I'd just rather not right now.
I hear you, man. I've been single, you know, most of my life. I'm just recently going through a breakup of like 2 months myself. I actually started writing a funny memoir that my buddy inspired me to come up with. Because he was telling me about like some book he was reading about this guy and, you know, it was a story about all his, you know, conquests and his love life and whatnot. And the guy got popped for fabricating 80% of the story. And he's like, man, you know, I'd rather read a book from you because at least you lived it and you got nothing to lie about. So I went home and opened up a notebook. You know, I have a ton of different notebooks. I typically use them as like lyric books. And started writing a book called The Musician's Guide to Dating. And it's basically about, you know, the struggles and tribulations about how hard it is to, like, you know, have a career and, you know, you're constantly out networking and having to scout bands and, you know, sit in the office during the day. Sometimes I work from 10 a.m. to, you know, 3 a.m. in the morning, you know, so it's very hard to, like, meet someone that didn't want to, you know, just have that level of like control or possessiveness or need of constant attention all the time. And it's not like I didn't have that to offer to somebody. It was just, it was a hard setting to even, you know, meet somebody, you know, I mean, half the time, yep. You know, every chick you come up to is already half in the bag. You know what I'm saying? Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, relationships take time, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, being on the road, I don't know.
So I guess
it could work. It works for some people.
Yeah,
but no, you know,
people make
some
it
people
work.
Doesn't.
Some people put careers first ahead of it, and you know people
I
do.
Put myself.
Huh?
Yeah.
What were you gonna say?
No, I'm just saying like I just learned that in life through what I've been through. If it doesn't make me happy, I don't want to do it.
Mm.
And I've also learned in life that, you know, I don't mean this in a way to where I don't believe in love or I'm bitter towards anything like that. Hopefully no one takes it that way.
Right.
But I'm not the kind of person sitting around like bummed with nothing to do waiting for someone to make me happy. I have to make myself happy.
Right.
Okay. And if I meet someone that wants to take that happiness away, you know what I mean? I can't be with you.
Right.
And because I'm all about that, like, yo, I'm put on this earth for a short amount of time. I've already been through a lot, you know, and so that, you know, just, that's just why I stayed single, because I wanted to just devote 100% to my kids. And then when I didn't have my kids, I'm riding, man.
Right.
You know, I don't have time. I literally don't have time. And one day I probably will, but right now I'm cruising. You know what I'm saying?
That's a great way to put it. I like that.
It's harder. Yeah.
Right now I'm just cruising. Well,
yeah, maybe,
you know,
I mean, who knows? I may meet the right girl right now. Right now I'll be like, what? And I'll be like, cool. But at the same time, I'm not like, you know, like over here, like well, I really wish I could meet someone so that I could finally be happy. I'm not that kind of person.
Right.
You know, be nice, but at the same time, I still got shit going on. We're good.
No, I feel you, dude. You definitely have that PMA, and that's one thing I noticed about you. The first time I even, like, saw you in person, you were singing for Punk Rock Karaoke at the Viper Room. You were, like, a featured guest, and we had opened up
the show.
This is, like, probably 2016, 2017, something like that. It was an epic time, but you just, like, I can't remember word for word what you said to the crowd, but it was very, like, motivational and positive. And I was like, I like this dude. And when we did that show down here in San Diego a few years back with Ani, when she suggested it, she's like, well, I could book Rick Thorne's band. I was like, oh, I didn't even know he had a band. You know, but I've only seen him come up and do a song of Punk Rock Karaoke. I was like, yeah, let's do it. And that's when that whole show came to be. So when I heard that you were on this bill for Gutterfest, I was so stoked. I was like, fuck yeah. I was like, I fucking love this dude. I want to get to know this dude better. I was like, you know, and that's what it inspired me to want to have you on my show. You know, because my tagline is everyone's got a story to tell, and I just want yours to get heard. And
yeah, dude.
I want to be able to inspire my listeners. I don't give a fuck if it's one person that listens to this episode or 5 million. If one person is affected and finds some kind of inspiration or healing from listening to your wise words, that's all that matters to me. This is like another source of entertainment at the same time. But most importantly, my current career is as a nutrition and lifestyle coach. And I just like helping people. I've always been that way. And I'd like to surround myself around people that are like that. I mean, you know, we're both getting older. I'm in my early 40s. You're in your early 50s, right? And you just reach a certain point where you don't want to be around a bunch of partiers and burnouts and people that don't have ambition and you know, may feel like they're going to drag you down. No offense to those people that may feel lost and confused in life. You know, I have a lot of friends like that I've tried to help over time. Some I've had to kind of just say, you know what, dude, I'm here if you need me, but you know, you just got to figure out your own shit. And
yeah, for sure.
You know, there's some that have died, unfortunately. And, you know, it's that's just life. You said it earlier, like, life is precious. Life is short, man. And you really got to just live it to its fullest. And like, that's one thing I love about you. I can just sense that kind of energy, you know? I mean,
thank you.
Anyways, I just went off on a whole.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, it is short life. You know, I've always felt that way, bro. I mean, I just found, you know, I felt blessed. I found something I like to do when I was 12. And then my son found something I like to do when he's 8. This is fifth year pro ball. I mean, I could see him playing high school, college pro if he wants. I'm not even tripping. I know that he could do it if he wants to do it. And what I'm getting at it by saying all that is that, like, just at a young age, I just kind of knew that, like, you know, my mom, she was going through some shit. I remember a few times we would stay the night in the graveyard where my uncles were buried. Yeah, it was crazy, bro. And so I was this little kid. But the first time I was kind of freaked out and shit because it's like graveyard, you know?
Right.
And we ended up with these tombstones and shit. And then I was like, you know what, dude? This is what I saw myself as a kid. This is where I'm going to end up. So why not go for it? So I looked at it like, thanks for taking me there. It motivated me. As fucked up as that sounds, that's what it did to me. It made me go, okay, I get it. Oh, I understand. This is it. That's the end of the road. Okay, so whatever I do from here to there is what I got to do. So let's go. And that's why I'm really hyper the way I am about if I want to do something, I dive right into it and I go for it. And it's because you got nothing to lose.
Right.
You know, I don't want to be breathing my last breath of air going, I wish I would have started a band. I don't want to do that.
Right.
So what I got to do to make it work, figure it out, you know?
Right.
I mean, the thing about bands is people don't see the grunt work and the grind and the branding and the coming up with everything to get people interested in your music and stuff. They don't see that. They just see you come out and then they critique you. What's this band? Where are they from? Mm. Who are they? It's like, well, I don't know. They've been around 13 years and they finally got a hit. It's like, people don't see that part, so you can't really listen to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know what? That actually made me think of something that someone just recently said to me. She's like, why are you have you been doing Authentic Stella for 15 years if you're not making any money doing it? And I looked at that person and I replied, I was like, because this is my passion. This is my therapy. It's what makes me happy. And, you know, like, it's more for me than them, even though I feed off the energy of, like, the listeners and the crowd. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, some people just don't get it. And this person doesn't have, like, a hobby or a passion like we do for music or you know, action sports. You know, I never really excelled with action sports myself. I was more the photographer and filmer guy, but, you know, I'll still go out there and charge and skate and surf and snowboard, even though, you know, I never really got that good at it. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
I found my craft in other ways.
Right.
You know, and I'll never forget, like, the first time I ever just sang. I dropped the guitar and just picked up a mic and sang, and it was electrifying. And that feeling is something that a lot of people don't understand, you know? So my whole point, what I'm trying to say is, like, you know, to our listeners, especially, don't let somebody try to drag you down, you know, just because something isn't hitting or making money, just keep doing it. If it makes you happy, fuck what everybody else has to say, you know?
Well, also too, like a lot of people, they want to, what I believe through my life and for what people try to talk to me about when, you know, what I was doing is I think people kind of go, they gauge off of like your dreams off of like something they might've tried and failed at. No. So they think you can't do it just because they didn't do it. They think you can't do it, but they might not want to see you do it. That's what I noticed about people too. Right. Some people, they don't want to see you succeed. And so, because they're not succeeding. And so those are toxic. That's toxic. So those are the people you just got to get away from. But I think most people, they'll compare, they'll say, you know, that you're, you know, that's childish, or how do you make money riding a bike? I've heard it all, dude. And I'm just like, whatever. You go do your job. I do not care what you do with your life. I do not. What your career choice is on you. I'm not here to tell you any different. Okay? If you have a dream and a passion and a vision, follow it. That's all I can say. Because I followed mine, and I didn't listen to all that stuff, you know?
Right.
Didn't listen to it because I just always felt like those were people just kind of gauging their lives and projecting onto me about what my life was going to be. It's like, dude, no, it's not even, no, I'm not you. We're all different people. We all have different ways of doing things, you know? So, yeah, anybody listening, you know, if you got a vision or a dream and it's positive and it feeds your soul and makes you a better person and you feel accomplished, yeah, man, hey. I say go for it. Yeah.
Right on. Now, do you have any like catchphrases or a slogan that you like to use or a hashtag?
I always say stay rad. I've been saying that for the last 10 years.
Right on.
And you know what? It's kind of like a little movement I did in my head. Like, stay rad was like a, no matter what's going on in your life, man, keep it rad. Like, find a way to make it work. I did a lot of self-therapy. A lot of ways changed my way of thinking. Mm. A lot of things I was attracted in my life that I didn't want to attract anymore. I did a lot of my own therapy. And so stay rad was, it's really just like it's a phrase to like, to motivate, to say, you know, whatever's getting you down, you got to keep it rad, dude, get past it and keep moving on. You know?
I love it, man. I say at the end of our episodes, typically stay radical.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Cool.
That's awesome. I feel you on that for sure, man. It sounds like we share a lot of the same, you know, insights and I like the way that your brain operates, man. We're on the same wavelength for sure, man. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So let's go back to, you know, BMX for a second. How old were you when you first started riding? Like when you realized that, hey, I love this.
I mean, it wasn't structured. You know, like I didn't even look at the BMX magazine yet.
Yeah.
So it was just like doing wheelies and jumping curves in the street. I mean, ever since I can remember riding a bike, I loved it. The first time I learned how to ride without training wheels, you know.
Right.
It was just a feeling to be on my bike because you can go anywhere quick. You can get out and get away and travel across town and just be out free, you know?
I used to do that all the time.
I'm out. It's like, I just bought a motorcycle, and I get the same thing with that. Like, I want to go ride down PCH and chill and cruise and go for a cruise. But it's not the same as ZMX, but it's like, if anyone could relate, it's something like that. You find your place where you can get away, and you're away from all the bullshit. And that was riding was to me as a young age. I just knew it. So it was before sponsors and contests, magazines, and all that stuff. Like, it was just simply jumping with my friends in the neighborhood, trying to do wheelies, who could do wheelies the furthest, shit like that.
I don't know,
7, 8 years old, something like that, 9 maybe.
Do you remember the first bike, BMX bike that you had?
I had a, I'm a 70s kid. So my first like bike, and this is before BMX bikes were kind of out. They were really out, you know? It was that Evel Knievel bike, bro, with the gas tank and shit on it.
That's right. Yeah, I totally know what you're talking about. That's so awesome.
Yeah, dude. That's when I learned how to ride without training wheels, was that bike.
Nice.
And, but that's before there was like BMX. It was considered BMX sport, racing and shit. It was all new. But that was in California. There were, like I said, there weren't any magazines. Wasn't on the radio. Wasn't on TV. There was no internet. You know what I'm saying? We didn't know that shit.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I got into
the culture out here.
I actually got into, wanted a BMX bike after watching the movie Rad when I was like, you know, I don't know, 6, 7 years old. Back
in
the 80s.
I got a lot of people involved. Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's still a timeless classic to this day, you know? And there's a few movies, you know, that featured, like, skateboarding, like Thrashing and...
Gleaming the Cube.
Yeah, that was another good one. That are like that, are timeless classics, you know? And I always try to influence, like, kids that, you know, are in the younger generation to go back and watch those type of flicks, you know? They had a lot more soul than a lot of the movies that are put out, you know, this day and age.
So. Yeah, well, it's just like everything, you know, from acting to, you know, just to keep it positive at the same time, but from acting to music to sports, you know, the help of the internet, I think personally there was always a lot of good people. Or a lot of people that had the potential to be good.
Right.
It's just, you had to be noticed. In order to get noticed, you had to move to Hollywood in order to try to get into films, or move to Hollywood to try to get a record deal, or go to Nashville, or like, but I think all along, I was thinking this the other day, I think there was good people all the time. They just didn't have any, they were discouraged because they didn't have a way to get it out there.
Right.
You know, you had to pack up and move. Now it's like, you know, who do I got to send this link to? You know, so I think back in the day, there was a group of musicians that were probably good that never got noticed just for that fact, you know?
Oh,
think about it. If you're jamming a band in Nebraska in the 60s, you got to move. No one's going to, you got to get your demo to somebody. You got to record it in the studio. You can record shit. We're recording a podcast over the phone. Fuck shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, exactly.
So I just think back then, There probably was a lot of people that were wanted to be involved. They just didn't have the access. So.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I had to start off like, you know, jamming for the first time in my parents' garage. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now it's just so you don't even need a full band anymore. Especially.
No, but you know what? It's all good.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, you got to figure it out. Everybody's got a different story, you know? And if you love it, you'll figure it out. And if you, you know, that shines through. And that's what I was saying earlier. Question yourself what you do. If you really love it, you'll be able to do it a lifetime. If your intentions are for fame and money, you might be in and out quick. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's just a tall extra bonus. That's how I look at it.
Right.
Fame and money and opportunity is just a bonus on top of what you love to do. Granted, yes, dude, I know I have to raise my kids and I have to make money. You find out a way how to make money doing what you love to do. But without that love, you wouldn't put up with a lot of the stuff that I put up with in order to keep doing it. You know what I mean?
True. So for our listeners out there, you know, it's common to, you know, have a career, whether it's, you know, sports related or whatever, where you kind of just lose the fire and the passion. Has that ever happened to you? And have you ever had to get through like those types of hurdles to really like ignite that kind of inspiration and find your self again?
Absolutely, dude. Starting a band was one of them. It's you reinvent yourself. See, what I do is I do stand-up comedy. I cook. I draw. I do art. I have a band. I host TV shows. I act in movies. I ride a bike. If all I did was still just ride a bike and gauge my value off of what place I got in a contest, I don't know if I would be like as probably my burnout. Because one thing that I've learned in life is that you have to reinvent yourself. What I've been doing lately, I've been going back and riding with Tony Hawk down his ramp once, twice a week to relearn all my vert shit. Because I didn't ride vert for a while. I started riding pools. And when you ride pools, you lose all your tricks. Because pools are gnarly, right? It's hard to do tricks in pools.
Right.
So what I'm getting at is that reinvent. Change your hair. Do something different. Change your bike. Something that's going to make you feel like you're moving forward and that you're progressing and that you're learning a new trick. Ride something different. I haven't rode street in a while. Oh, let's go ride park. Oh, let's ride vert. Let's go lake jump. That's it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're always switching it up, but it's always, and so then you get into other things and other careers based off of your BMX and go into other stuff that you have to be fearless about it. You can't be afraid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're a top athlete and you're going to start a band. Some people are afraid of that because they don't want to be judged. And I'm just like, judge me all you want. I've been judged my whole life. It's all good. You know? So to answer your question, like, yeah, dude, you have to set goals. And you know, that's another thing about Instagram. It helps me set goals. It's weird as it sounds. Like, I put my camera down. I shoot a lot of my own photos and videos and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I set a daily goal of like, and it motivates me. You're looking for that every day you wake up. You're looking for that like stoke every day without the drugs, without the alcohol, without all that, to go out and ride. And then you start to get creative, and that's what keeps you in, at least me, this is for me. That's what keeps me inspired to where I don't feel like, oh, I'm tired of riding, because I haven't placed one value on it. You know, I haven't placed a contest placing the be all end all of like what my title is. Don't get me wrong. Competing's rad. Competing's gnarly. I competed 25 years straight. I'm all down with it. I get it, but that's not my only value.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen to other riders where it's been their only value and they've gotten out of the sport. Because, you know, they've made that I'm assuming that they might have made that the value of what made them valuable as a rider, but you know, I'm just assuming though, you know.
Yeah, I feel you, man.
Yeah, starting a band's not easy, bro, or like, oh, I'm gonna do this. People are like, what?
Dude, I've been doing this 15 years, and I'm the only consistent, like, longest-lasting member, other than my guitar player, and he even left for, like, 4 years to pursue business interests, and then he came back into the fold. But, yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying there. Being in a band is like being married to five different dudes, or however different band members you have. You have your ups and you have your downs. And the true test to seeing if you guys can stand being around each other for that long is going on tour. Tour is not as glitzy and glamorous as everyone thinks it is. There's not a whole lot of money in it until you hit that level of popularity, you know, or you have like label support. The dream that we had, you know, at least when I first started out back in the 90s, you know, wanting to get signed and all that, I never thought we'd be in this kind of day and age. I never really envisioned that, you know, we'd have this kind of platform where we could put everything out there. And I try to utilize it for the right reasons. I'm not just posting the post, and some people do that, but hey, nothing wrong with that either. If that's what keeps you happy and satisfied, go for it. As long as you're putting out positive content, you know. But yeah.
Yeah.
I love playing music, and that is something that I was actually wanting to ask you too. Like, do you play any other instruments, or do you just sing? Like, how did you get into wanting to sing in a band? And why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, you know, with what came with Action Sports in the early days was hosting. You ride a day, you host a day, you ride 2 days, you host a day. And so I learned, like, I was about 17. I was good on a mic, good crowd hyped up, hype guy and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then that led me all the way through the years to do, like, Tony Hawk's tour and arenas with 15,000 people. Eating out of your hand. Not eating out of your hand, but you know what I mean? Like, you had control. Like, say this. People would be like, it's all
right,
you know?
Right.
Get them hyped up, you know? And I always wanted to be in a band, bro, just growing up. Like, just you know, wanted to vocalize myself. But, you know, what really got me into it was I just reached a point in my life where I felt like, you know, when you're focused as an athlete and you're, you know, in the X Games and that's your goal every year to make it in there, work your ass off and stuff. Competitive, it's a lot on your body and it's just not handed to you. And so when that's your focus, it's hard to find the time to be in a band as well. You kind of got to like make a decision. You could do like a part-time. Some people do both, but it's demanding on you if you're going to be like full throttle at that time. Because at that time, with that craze with the X Games, it was booming. There was something new every day to do. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
And I just reached a point where I was like, look, man, I've competed this many years. I've accomplished this much and this and this. I know for a fact that I could still be a rad bike rider and start a band, and I'm going to go for it. So I'd kind of like not necessarily got the confidence from riding, but at the same time, like, that's what I was known for. That's how I was making my money. That's how I was supporting my family. And, you know, to start a band is just something that I just said, I'm going to do this. And, you know, after years and years of touring Warped Tour and watching band after band go through and make it big and standing on the stage every day behind Rancid watching them play and Social D and Pennywise. Some days Pennywise would be like, come up and see Minor Threat, Rick. And then I got a little taste of what it was like to be a musician. I remember one year Pennywise couldn't go to Hawaii on the Warped Tour. And Broham was kind of like the anthem for Warped Tour. The Boston started playing it, and me and Caballero were on stage. And Dickie Barrett, you know, from the Boston, he didn't know the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, anybody know the lyrics? Like, and he looked at me, and I go, I do. And so I got to sing Broham in front of, like, I don't know, 5,000-7,000 people. This is before, this is like 97 or 98, 10 years before I even, like, started a band. I'm getting a taste of what it would be like. You know what I'm saying?
Your taste.
Yeah. I was like, shit. And but then I performed in front of 7,000-10,000 people on my bike all the time. So I was already used to being in front of people.
Right.
So it was just kind of like a thing where, like, you know, I'd reached a point where I was like, you know what? Do or die, man. I've been thinking of this my whole life, and I'm at the point now where – but I didn't know a lot. You know, someone would say, like, hey, do you guys have a back line? I'd be like, what's up?
Yeah,
you know, I didn't know the lingo and shit. I had to learn it all.
Oh, dude,
you know?
That's why I threw myself in the fire when I was 20 years old. I was inspired by going to all ages shows at a club down here called Soma. My father found the place because he was in the Social D and Sublime and bought a couple concert tickets for us. And he's like, hey, I'm going to start dumping you off here every single weekend because you need to let out some positive aggression in that mosh pit. And that's what inspired me to want to get on every capacity. I saw kids in bands throwing their own shows and opened up for their heroes. And I was like, I want every aspect of this. So it took me like 5 or 6 years to really figure it out, you know. Of course. Yeah. You know, I got the opportunity of doing that, and that lasted for like a decade of my life. And then I went and opened up a recording rehearsal studio, you know, and people ask me, you know, all the time, like, how did you achieve this? How did you achieve that? I was like, you know what? A lot of people laughed in my face, called me crazy, said I couldn't do this, couldn't do that. And I never let that once stop me. Like, when I put my mind to something, I go all in. And that's like the easiest way for me to really reference it. You're either all in or you're all out, you know?
Yeah.
It's just kind of like with Authentic Sellout. I tell people, you're either a sellout or sold out. So take your pick.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't. Yeah, what I learned in life is, like, you're powerless to what other people think and what they say and how they feel. The only thing is you're in control of what you are and what you project and what you see through your eyes and what you think and say is what you get, period. If you keep saying the same old story, you're going to get the same old result, period. That's how your subconscious mind works. It only reacts off of what you think and say, and it doesn't know the difference between anything between hot or cold, rich or poor, high or low. It only knows of what you say and think. That's how it works. And that's what controls your path in life. So when people kind of hate and stuff or whatever, I get it every now and then, but it doesn't bother me. I used to, but I learned to not let it. It's like, that's just that person through their eyes seeing something that they can't do. And you know what? Maybe one day they'll get past that and really actually start pursuing their dream. But that's not going to get in the way of my dream. Like, right. What you look through your eyes is what you see. Like my one friend's like, oh, but aren't you always worried, like, the worst will happen? You see, I told you the worst was going to happen. I go, no, you told yourself that because that's all you saw. And that's what your mind set for you. So I don't believe that. What I believe is that what you think and say is what you get. And people, it's easy to read somebody when they project on you. You just laugh at it.
Right.
You know, kind of like go, all right. You know, I don't. I mean, I posted something today about how I go to In-N-Out. You know, I get the patties and some dude DM me. So what do you say, no vegetables? You can get a protein salad. Can you please explain? And I never really, like, go out of the way to, like, comment too much. But I just commented back, like, do I have to explain? Uh-huh, just kidding. Yeah, dude, I eat meat only. Big deal. Figure out what works for you.
Yeah.
Like, that's the diet I'm on. I've lost 18 fucking pounds, dude. It's amazing.
That, yeah.
I eat beef, chicken, fish, turkey last 2 months. I cut all the sugar, all the carbs, all of it. And I've lost eight. And, you know, just from riding and not really being super hardcore in the gym, but that's just riding and changing my diet. I've trimmed down 18 pounds, bro.
That's amazing. Yeah. My weight has fluctuated over the years, too. And what I've realized is, you know, I can eat clean, but the way my body works is I have to also stay active. That's also half the battle. So, you know, for our listeners out there, try to find something, you know, to stay active. Get off the couch, put the phone down, you know, quit playing video games. Go and exercise for an hour, a couple hours, you know, whether it's walking, running, BMXing, you know, surfing, something, you know, just stay active. Life is too short to just sit and waste in front of a TV device.
A lot of kids, though, too. I can't blame the kids because, you know how many times I've had to organize a play date in order for my kids to hang out with someone?
I bet. Yeah.
Like, you had to plan 2 weeks in advance for them to hang out for 2 hours at an indoor trampoline place.
Right.
It's under surveillance because you sit there and watch them.
Right.
Like, dude, let them be kids. It's the sheltering, you know, in some cases, and the fear of all this stuff. And now with COVID, obviously, during all that, it's hard to hang out with anybody. But, you know, it's hard for the kids because they grow up in that, you know, and they don't know any different. You know what I mean?
It's true.
They think everything's like you got to organize a play date to go on a bike ride. It's like, you just get on your bike and go pedal around the neighborhood. But
right.
The parents won't let them. You know, you understand what I'm saying? Like, it's not all parents, but I think some parents have been, at least in my experience with my kids, restricting about that.
Right.
Very, very, like, very, very strict about, you know, their time. And I'm just like, look, dude, like, you gotta let your kid live a little bit. I don't know.
I feel you, dude.
There's no right or wrong way to parenting. It's however you want to do it. But just for me, I just choose to let my kids be active. They feel better about themselves, so.
Right. Yeah, you gotta, like, let them make their own decisions. You know, that's how my parents were, and I'm thankful for that. I didn't always make the right decisions, but you know what? That's life, you know? I mean, tomorrow's a new day, and as long as
you're
healthy, breathing, and staying alive, that's all that really matters. You know, I live my every day like it could be my last. Like, for example, I just lost a friend to a motorcycle accident a couple weeks ago.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and it just kind of, it's things, the tragic events, circumstances that are unfortunate that happen that remind you that, you know, life is short. Like last night I went and attended the San Diego Music Awards, and I did a podcast interview where I was like the guest on this artist show, and he's a hip-hop artist here in San Diego. His name was Van Bates, and he went by Black Hesher. And he had this like really punk attitude, and we talked about collaborating and doing stuff together. And then he unfortunately died a few weeks after I did that podcast. And he posthumously, like a music award last night. It was beautiful to see that. And his whole little, you know, click and crew, he had like a production company called Cult Music.
Wait, he died?
Yeah, he unfortunately passed away. And the message that they had to say, you know, accepting his award was so, like, beautiful, man. It was just like, you know, live free, do what you want, you know, music lasts forever. And it's all about, like, you know, with music, you have a lasting legacy. Like, how do you want to be remembered? That was, like, the whole message. And, like, he will always be remembered for being a wonderful human being. You know what I mean? And
yeah, man.
It just makes you think, like, how are people going to remember you when your time's up? You know what I mean? And a lot of people.
You know, my honest opinion.
Sure.
We all fade away.
Yep, I agree.
And what I mean by that, I don't mean in a bad way. Because you die, and then your family remembers you, and but then they die, and then as it goes on, you keep going on, you just kind of become forgotten.
Bro, we just filmed a music
unless
video.
Unless you're like Michael Jackson or like Beethoven or someone like that, like Genghis Khan or some shit, or like, you know, or like you know, a president of some sort or some, like, you know, like that. If he lasted a lot, like, how long have we known about the Romans and shit? You know what I'm saying?
No,
like,
totally.
Very few people are known forever in the history books. But most people, most of us, we fade away. And I don't mean it negatively. That's what my new song's about that we wrote called Time Slips Away.
Yeah.
Is like, you don't fade away, but at the same time, we all fade away. And that's why you got to live in the moment. And that's really all you have is a moment. So it's a weird balance, though, because you want to live in the moment, but you don't want to blow all your money and be a fool because you want to plan for your future at the same time. But then you got to come to terms and realize that you're not going to be here forever. So it's like a weird balance, you know?
Right.
And, you know, that's exactly what it is. We fade away, man. And I don't mean it like bad, you know? And that's why really you have to live for today. And all these things we've been talking about this whole podcast, like, yeah, don't worry about what people say. That's just their own trip. Just keep your mind on you. Keep telling yourself what you want, and that's what you'll get. Don't put other people's thoughts in your head. You
right.
know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, that's yeah. I hear about your buddy. Sorry about your buddy, though. That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was unfortunate. I mean, I remember my mom telling me once when I first started out in this industry, and it had only been a couple years in, and she's like, I was telling her about somebody passed away that I worked with, and she's like, you know, my whole lifetime, and I know a lot of people, I've never had to deal with so much death. How do you do it? And I was like, well, you were an RN nurse, you know, growing up, and I saw the way you handled it. You just got to, you know, not dwell on it and appreciate the good times and the bad times and just, you know, the memory of that person. And you know, for how long you got to know them, whether you know them in short amount of time or, you know, long term. It's just, but it never gets easier. You know, I was going to say, kind of like a tail end of what you were saying about, you know, we all fade away. I had that kind of self-realization more than ever last year when we filmed the music video called Cemetery. We filmed at Mount Hope here in San Diego, which is the oldest cemetery in San Diego. And they had tombstones going back to like the 1800s. And one of the crew like pulled me aside and he's like, hey, you know what the sad part is about a tombstone like this? It was from like 70 or something like that. He's all, that generation of family is probably not even around anymore. This person is just forgotten unless someone walks by and notices this tombstone right now. And it just kind of made me think. And at that same day, Eddie Van Halen had passed away, which was even more eerie and surreal. And it's just, you know, your mind starts going in interesting directions. Meanwhile, I'm playing myself who gets, I don't want to, like, you know, give away the details because I want you guys to watch the video, but I'm basically, you know, dealing with, you know, a second chance at life. just to kind of allude to, you know, the whole point I was filming at a cemetery. But yeah, life is short, man. And speaking of short, we're running short on time. So we got to kind of wrap this interview up. First and foremost, how can people get a hold of you on social media?
It's at just at Rick Thorne. That's like, and then my band at Good Guys in Black.
Okay.
Yeah, man. So it's like, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff's all the same for both. But yeah, man, that's pretty much, that's the best way to see what I got going on with all my shenanigans.
Right on. And of course, I love to have all my guests leave our listeners with a positive affirmation or message. What would you like to tell everybody?
Stay rad, dude. That's it.
You heard
it. Live your life and stay rad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think you pretty much summarized everything in the hour we've been talking.
Rick, yeah, dude.
Dude, I got to tell you, man, it's been amazing sitting here talking to you. I love, like, you know, how we're on the same wavelength. And, you know, I knew, like, the second I saw you play, I was like, I'm going to love this dude. You know, I'm going to have a connection with this guy. And here we are all those years later. And
oh, yeah.
You, very wise. You know, I appreciate everything that you've had to say during this interview, and I hope our viewers do too. And on that note, it wraps up another episode of The King's Couch. I'm your host, Sulo King, and this is Rick Thorne and I saying stay rad.
Stay rad, dude. Peace out.
All right. Catch you later, Rick.
Thanks, bro.